there are so many needs in Alaska for transportation. We have such a huge state and our transportation needs are pretty diverse.
Millions of dollars in found federal money will come to Alaska projects. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, August 17th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, rancor over ballot measure 2.
Unlimited donations can come in from outside, and people need to know whose voices are being represented in these sorts of ads.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com.
And by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
The U.S. Department of Transportation says it has found hundreds of millions of dollars which went unspent over 3 years. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, Alaska will receive $20 million of previously allocated money for transportation projects.
U.S. Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood says his agency discovered nearly $500 million of previously allocated money, money that was earmarked between 2003 and 2006, federal money that, for whatever reason, states never spent.
You know, I don't know every reason, but it really doesn't make any difference. The fact is the money was not spent, and in the no earmark era, we need to spend it. And in an era when unemployment in the construction and building trades is much higher than many other industries, we need to get the money out the door.
Alaska is slated to receive more than $20 million. It must submit its plan for federal approval by October 1st and then obligate it by the end of the year. That means the state will select the construction-ready projects and show how the money will be spent. Construction can wait until next year, or at least warmer, brighter weather. Governor Sean Parnell will accept the money, even though he's been reluctant to take federal dollars in the past. Brenda Hewitt is with the Alaska Department of Transportation. She says the announcement caught the state DOT by surprise, and officials there are deciding which projects to fund. That, she says, should not be a problem.
There are so many needs in Alaska that for transportation. We have such a huge state, and our transportation needs are pretty diverse.
The move is part of President Barack Obama's "we can't wait" approach. He's sidestepping Congress in hopes of showing would-be voters he's more proactive than the legislative branch. The announcement comes just 3 months before voters take to the polls to elect a president in an election where jobs and unemployment are the major themes. Politics, Secretary LaHood insists, has nothing to do with the announcement. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Governor Sean Parnell is seeking a federal disaster declaration for king salmon fisheries in Upper Cook Inlet. Parnell's request was made yesterday. In a statement, Parnell says the fisheries were severely restricted and even closed for much of the season. Parnell says the region saw low king salmon returns and adds the fisheries are economic drivers for the region. A federal disaster declaration does not bring automatic assistance. A federal appropriation is needed to provide funds. The group sparring over a ballot measure to restore the Alaska Coastal Management Program traded barbs today, accusing each other of campaign disclosure violations. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
The Alaska Sea Party filed a complaint with the Alaska Public Offices Commission, arguing Vote No on 2's television and online video ads violate state campaign disclosure rules. The law requires groups to cite on-screen, in writing, and through an audible disclaimer, their top three financial backers. At the time the ads were produced, No on 2's top three contributors were the Alaska Miners Association, Shell Oil Company, and the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Since then, ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips have displaced Shell and Aoga on the group's website, but not in the ads. The Sea Party is sponsoring Ballot Measure 2. Lisa Weisler is the group's policy director.
The ads should stop. It's a very clear violation of the law. And so it should stop, or they should do it right. And they should have penalties assessed.
No on 2 spokesman Willis Lyford argues the group did nothing wrong, but he says the ads have now been updated to include Exxon and Conoco in the top three, as well as a verbal disclaimer.
On the advice of our lawyer, we've already changed the ads up. The new advertising will have the audio portion that they're suggesting is needed. And our view on that is, well, it'd be better to have belt and suspenders. You know, we want to make that change, and then we'll let the process play out and see what actually is the case.
Lyford calls the Sea Party hypocrites. He notes the group's website features YouTube videos with no audio disclaimer about its top contributors. He says the rule should apply to all campaign videos.
It doesn't matter whether it's paid advertising or not. It is advertising, and if in fact their submission is correct, then they're guilty of the same violation.
The Sea Party touts itself as a grassroots organization. Its top three contributors are the North Slope Borough, the Bristol Bay Native Corporation, and the Alaska Conference of Mayors. Weisler says the group is pulling the YouTube videos from its website until they can be updated to include a disclaimer, but she says there's a difference between videos posted online at no cost and expensive television commercials.
This is the reason for the law, that there's money that comes in from outside, unlimited donations can come in from outside, and people need to know whose voices are being represented in these sorts of ads.
State Senator Hollis French, an Anchorage Democrat, sponsored the 2010 state law that required groups to disclose their top contributors. He says the audio disclosure should apply to all campaign videos, but it's especially important for television ads.
It's crucial that people who are perceiving these commercials, whether you're watching a TV ad or even listening to it in the background, it's crucial that those people know who has donated to the entity behind that ad.
Alaska Public Offices Commission Executive Director Paul Dauphiné says the commission will take up the Sea Party's latest complaint on Monday. The two sides also have filed complaints challenging the other's name, citing a state law requiring a group's moniker reflect an issue or goal and not simply express opposition or support of a particular measure. Dauphiné says those complaints won't be heard until next month. Measure 2 on the August 28th primary ballot would reestablish the Alaska Coastal Management Program. The Federal Coastal Zone Management Act allows states that adopt an approved coastal management program to have greater input into development decisions along their coastlines. It also streamlines the regulatory process of various local, state, and federal agencies. Alaska had a program for more than 30 years, but in 2011, the legislature and Parnell administration failed to reach a deal to reauthorize it. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The fishing vessel Evening Star will stay at the bottom of Slocum Arm. That's the word from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation about the vessel that sank in the western Chichagof Island waters earlier this month. The 50-foot Evening Star, home-ported in Sitka, capsized while seining on August 2nd. It was initially in shallow waters, but slipped to a depth of nearly 400 feet. A report from the DEC says the vessel released the majority of its fuel when it sank into deep waters. The boat had about 1,000 gallons of diesel on board, in addition to some lube oil and a hydraulic oil tank. The release of the oil products resulted in a sheen nearly a mile and a half long. It has since dissipated. No impacts to fish or wildlife were reported. The state further says crews have retrieved oil containment booms above the wreck and from the mouth of nearby salmon streams. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, travel woes for Nome residents.
There was concern that we were going to have to close the runway indefinitely if we couldn't make these repairs. And so that's why it's happening right now.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
A runway closure in Nome has passengers stuck for days waiting to fly in or out of the Seward Peninsula community. KNOM's Lorelei Kanin has the story.
The east-west runway in Nome has been closed since Monday due to an emergency closure. Settling subsurface created a big dip and potentially unsafe conditions for aircraft. But the closure had some residents confused. With the runway closed since Monday, no work as of this morning had yet been done to the runway. And so far, 7 Alaska Airlines flights have been canceled this week due to winds and weather and the stricter flight restrictions. It turns out some of the work crew contracted to fix the runway has been stuck in Anchorage due to flight cancellations. Twin Peaks Superintendent Doug Larson says the rest of the crew made it in on an Alaskan Airlines flight this morning, and the surveyors were expected to arrive this afternoon. As for the runway closure, Meadow Bailey is the public information officer for the Department of Transportation's Northern Region. She says the navigational aids for the east-west runway were turned off on Monday and the runway was closed. The DOT is required to coordinate with the FAA 60 days in advance of turning off those navigational aids. And 60 days ago, Monday, August 13th, was the agreed-upon date that the runway would be closed for construction.
Usually flights can come in with this kind of weather when they use the navigational aids. But once they're turned off, we have to wait to turn them back on until we're done with the construction.
Twin Peaks' Doug Larson had expected to begin work on the runway this afternoon. They will rehabilitate the sunken part of the runway and then repave and restripe. That work is expected to be complete on October 1st, and the runway should open then. Some wonder why the DOT waited until August, Nome's rainiest month, to work on the runway. DOT's Public Information Officer Meadow Bailey.
This time of year is not ideal for construction, but this is when we could, as quickly as we could get the funding, the project designed, and get it started. So we recognize that it's not the ideal time of year, but we felt like it was such a concern that it needed to be addressed as soon as possible.
The DOT realizes work done late in the season is not ideal, but they needed to fix the issue now before winter hits.
But I know that it's impacting the public and people who are flying, and I wish it wasn't like that. Unfortunately, like I said, it's an emergency repair job that we just felt like it needed to be done as soon as possible. There was concern that we were going to have to close the runway indefinitely if we couldn't make these repairs. And so that's why it's happening right now.
For now, aircraft is restricted to landing on the north-south runway. And with 7 Alaska Airlines flight cancellations and passengers facing waiting 4 days to travel, some have opted to go to smaller airlines. Bering Air's Director of Operations David Olson says on Tuesday some people got together and chartered a 1900 to and from Anchorage. And because ERA has daily passenger service from Unalakleet to Anchorage, ERA's station manager Myrtle Fagerstrom says they've seen passengers walk across the parking lot to make it to Anchorage via Unalakleet. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kanin.
An Anchorage man has pleaded guilty to illegally disposing of more than 200,000 pounds of hazardous waste. William Duran Vereza Jr. entered his plea today in U.S. District Court in Anchorage. Sentencing was scheduled for November 14th. The Department of Justice says in a release that he was president of Precision Pavement Markings Incorporated, a road and parking lot painting and striping business that operated from a storage lot. Authorities say he stored hazardous waste there, including paint and solvents used to flush nozzles and paint sprayers, but he abandoned more than 200,000 pounds of it. It cost the lot owner more than $380,000 to clean up and dispose of the waste. Vereza's public defender declined comment. A series of storms have swollen northwest Alaska rivers and streams in the Brooks Range, which in turn have caused flooding downstream. The Kivalina and Noatak areas are getting the worst of it, according to Harry Lind, a National Weather Service station manager in Kotzebue.
The Woolock River is crested at 15.3 feet Thursday morning, which is the highest level that's been observed since the gauge was installed back in 1985. And that river has risen about 10 feet over the past 48 hours. And there's, because of the amount of rain that we've had so far, it's caused quite a bit of localized flooding. We had one report of camp, one of Red Dog Mine's camps that's 3 feet underwater.
Lynn says area flood warnings have been extended through Saturday since more heavy weather is expected.
There's a low in the northern Chukchi that's been nearly stationary, and with that and the trough that extends to the south of it, we've had a series of smaller, weaker lows that have moved east towards us. And with the instability that's already in place, those low pressures have been able to tap into some warm, moist air from the south. And along with the cooler air that's being pushed down from the Chukchi, is just creating this rain. And all that rainfall is saturating the smaller streams, which is just continuing to empty into the larger rivers.
National Weather Service forecasters are keeping tabs on another low-pressure system heading for northwest Alaska. Longtime Alaska wolf biologist Tom Meyer has died. The National Park Service reports that the 61-year-old Meyer, who worked at Denali National Park, was found dead in his home Tuesday. No cause of death has been released. Meyer participated in a major Denali wolf study between 1986 and 1993. He also worked on federal reintroduction of wolves in Montana, but returned to Alaska in 2004, doing more predator-prey research for the National Park Service at Denali. Meyer was part of a team that authored the 2003 book, The Wolves of Denali. Fellow author and wolf biologist Lane Adams with the United States Geological Survey in Anchorage says Meyer was a practical scientist whose research pointed to wolves as a dynamic species.
The amount of turnover that goes on in a wolf population and how wolves are moving around and joining packs and leaving packs. And he certainly was, you know, one of the people that, you know, really kind of brought that whole concept together, that these wolf populations are pretty fluid, and the potential for them to exist in kind of a long-term lineage, you know, was probably not correct.
Meyer's perspective diverged from that of the late Gordon Haber, an Alaska wildlife scientist and wolf advocate who believed individual animals played key roles in passing down traits and behaviors in unique packs and lineages. The biology and protection of Denali wolves is a subject of major controversy, a situation Park Service spokesman John Quinley says Meyer navigated well.
He had that ability to sort of step beyond the politics and work with other agencies, the state of Alaska and others, and independent researchers. He could thread that needle very well in a politically charged place and environment.
Quinley says arrangements for a memorial service for Tom Meyer are still being worked out.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. First National Bank Alaska, offering business solutions to help Alaska's dreams grow for 90 years. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
GrantStation, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Tony Gorman. This week on AK, underground. North America's only permafrost research tunnel is pretty nondescript from the outside, but a small brown building built into a hillside by the Army Corps of Engineers in the late 1960s is actually the gateway to nearly 40,000 years worth of geology, ice, and history. Few Alaskans know it exists, but that might change this weekend when the Corps hosts the first ever permafrost tunnel open house. KUAC's Emily Schwing donned a hard hat and joined a tour to find out what's behind that refrigerator door.
Most people driving the Steese Highway miss the sign for the Army Corps of Engineers Cold Regions Research and Engineering Laboratory, or CREL. It's small and easy to overlook, as is the door to CREL's permafrost tunnel. But inside,
we just walked in the portal, so we're almost instantly back about 11,000 years.
Dr. Matthew Sturm is the chief scientist for CREL in Fairbanks. He's led tours of the dimly lit permafrost tunnel for more than 30 years.
I've looked over here 1,000 times. That's a very, very large bison.
Sturm shines a flashlight on a pale white horn that pops straight out of the wall. It's not a fossil. It's a well-preserved bone. There are more, lots more, that stick out of the walls everywhere.
We've never seen this one before. This is a bison horn. It still has the material on it, which is kind of like our fingernails, keratin. So it has been transported almost no distance. The chances of it being attached to a full skull is probably 99%.
This tunnel is 50 feet underground. It extends more than 300 feet in two separate shafts. The Army Corps dug it out in the late 1960s. Engineers still use it today to find better ways to build in areas dominated by permafrost. Geologists, ice scientists, and archaeologists have also used the tunnel as a study site in their research. Over the years, their sampling methods have left holes and markings all over the walls.
This nice soft stuff. This is the permafrost. This is what the tunnel's really like here.
Sturm scrapes the wall with the end of his flashlight. Pale brown, silty material flakes away to reveal a harder surface underneath. Only half the tunnel is actually solid ice, which baffles 13-year-old Charlie Simon. He's on the tour with his family from Alabama. Charlie says he expected a tunnel made completely of clear ice. There are other details that surprise him, too.
I expected it to be cold, but not this cold. It's pretty cold.
And what does it smell like?
It's kind of stale, but at the same time, it's really sharp. You can't really compare it to anything. It just gets all in your nose and really smell. You get used to it, but it's really sharp in the beginning.
That's the smell of 40,000 years of decaying organic material dating back to the Pleistocene. Halfway down the smaller shaft, an arching deposit of dark, smooth ice extends from the floor and reaches overhead on both sides. University of Alaska Fairbanks graduate student Margaret Siseski explains how this ice wedge formed.
The ground, it can get so cold that the ice in it will start to shrink and contract. When it does that, it can get to a certain point where there's so much stress it'll want to crack. And so it does. It gets filled with water and some silt and some air bubbles and freezes. That's a plane of weakness. And so it'll crack in the same location. I'll do it over and over and over again.
This ice wedge is likely 3,000 years old. Others occur throughout the tunnel. Matthew Sturm shines his flashlight on a lens of ice in the ceiling. Dry, wrinkly plant material hangs above our heads.
We have a pond that's somehow located above the ice wedge here. And we're looking at sedges here. So that's exactly what I expect in a pond. They are still green.
The only difference between these sedges and the ones that grow in similar ponds on Alaska's North Slope today is about 30,000 years. There isn't any modern-day permafrost forming in the Fairbanks area, and Sturm says there are few places in the world where features of life like this are preserved as well.
It's an older, colder climate. You know, it's a world we don't currently have in Alaska, but one that we've come through, and there's a lot of lessons in that climate about the future we're facing, which is yet a different climate.
Krell is building a new tunnel 100 yards away. Eventually, all the shafts will connect. The goal is to open the tunnel doors a little wider to give the public a chance to step back in frozen time. From 50 feet underground near Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're off to the community of Kenny Lake in the Copper River Valley to celebrate the annual Kenny Lake Fair, which promises mischievous fun.
I'm Kim Morris, and I live in Kenny Lake, and I've lived here since 1990, and Kenny Lake's a great place to live. It's a close-knit community. There's a lot of folks who came early in the 60s when homesteading opened, and that's when the agricultural end of Kenny Lake started. The farmers came, and they're the ones who formed our Kenny Lake community and evolved it into what it is today. We have beautiful views, a great school, a great church community. living here in Kenny Lake with everyone helping each other. And you'll find people ranging from teachers to entrepreneurs, self-sufficient folks live here in Kenny Lake. I suppose myself would range between all of those. I've done a number of jobs to be able to stay in Kenny Lake, from driving school bus to substituting at the school, working in local businesses. I've run my own business here in Kenny Lake for on and off for years. Currently working at the Copper Moose B&B, which is one of the great places to stay in Kenny Lake. When something happens, everybody comes to support you if that's what's needed, or there's so many organizations that are here to help everybody. Volunteerism is the word around here. And here today we're at the Kenny Lake Fair, so that's what it's about. The Kenny Lake Fair is about volunteering, and we have everybody comes and participates, and keeping the grounds up, keeping the community hall buildings up. It's just an amazing place to live with.
That was Kim Morse at the Kenny Lake Fair. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Schwing, Annie Feit, and David Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Tony Gorman.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Ed Bronco in Sitka, Lorelei Kanin in Nome, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Tony Gorman was our AK guest host this week. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. A PFD reminder, check the status of your 2012 PFD application with MyPFD Info online at pfd.alaska.gov. You can view or change your voluntary deductions until Friday, August 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home, and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.